Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Profiles. I'm Paula Schiller with the second chapter in the continuing mystery of why St. Mary's School is so good at producing students who are obviously successful in two cultures. St. Mary's School is in St. Mary's Village in the lower Yukon River region of southwestern Alaska. Judith Kleinfeld of the Institute of Social and Economic Research spent 5 years unraveling the mystery of St. Mary's and has written a book about it called Eskimo School on the Andreevsky, A Study in Effective Bicultural Education. From our previous conversation, we know that St. Mary's form of bicultural education is effective because the students who graduate are. They are articulate and outspoken. And frankly, this is in contrast to many other Native students I've talked to here on the Fairbanks campus. Native students are often shy and depend on nonverbal communication. Smiles say a lot, but in the classroom and on the radio, it's words that count. Judith Kleinfeld says that my first impression is not untypical.
I remember once when I first came to Alaska, I talked to a group of Eskimo women about that, and I said, I just can't believe it. When you're by yourselves, you know, you're always talking and laughing, and it just seems like the conversation never stops. And then when you're without a group of Eskimo people and everything is so quiet and silent, at one point I said I thought that Eskimo people just didn't like to talk very much, and they just laughed and laughed at how naive that comment was. Mm-hmm. I think what's happening is that the St. Mary's kids are developing ways of being comfortable with whites. And like most of us, if they feel comfortable in a situation, they'll talk once it becomes familiar. The volunteers were the teachers, the main teachers there, were not much older than the kids. It was kind of interesting. Your seniors at St. Mary's would be 18 or 19 years old. Their teachers would be 22, 23. They were at a very similar stage of life and experience. And the teachers would very often talk to the students about all sorts of personal, intimate things and reveal as people their own fears and concerns and their motivations, what made them tick. Openness was a big theme at the school, the importance of being open with your feelings and your concerns and your guilts. So the students, I think, lost a lot of their fear of being uncomfortable with whites, and they realized that everything they knew about what made people tick and what made people go applied to the whites as much as it did to the people at home.
You talked about St. Mary's students, and that explains part of the mystery. We have to talk about the teachers. I had no idea that, for instance, that they were volunteers. I didn't think there's any such thing as real volunteers, but St. Mary's does have a volunteer staff?
Yes. The staffing is interesting. It's a mixture of structure and tradition and change, represented by different groups of teachers. The religious staff, who are primarily Ursulines and Jesuits, are the forces of tradition and structure. They maintain the school and the way things are done. But every year, a new wave of volunteer teachers comes in. There, it's like the Peace Corps. But the volunteer teachers are rather carefully selected, and it's each year about 10% of the group are rejected, primarily because they do not want people coming to find themselves. They think that it's a real imposition on Eskimo children to have an adult come who's sort of looking for his own identity. One of the teachers said, if you haven't found yourself, how can you help other people find themselves? They want an adult who's well put together and who knows something of who he is and where he's going and who wants to work for nothing.
They put that ahead of any academic credentials?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They're always looking for people who have experience in business education and science. It's very easy to get the English social science majors. But by far, the character is more important than the formal teaching.
I just know so many stories, just horror stories of Catholic education with nuns beating on kids with rulers.
Yes.
And also of horrible Peace Corps stories. It doesn't seem that this combination is particularly
delicious. You're right, yeah. It's interesting. For one thing, Catholic education has changed a great deal. I know many, many people who cannot believe a Catholic school is effective because of the horror stories. St. Mary's has also changed a great deal. In the early 50s, religious attendance was forced, for example. But now, to go there, especially Catholics just do not believe the fact that there's no compulsory religious attendance. Nobody has to go to chapel every day. Grace is not said before meals. There's none of the formal religious observance or forced religious observance that occurs traditionally with Catholic education. What there is a kind of ethic that's rooted in religion. It's concern and responsibility for others. But the volunteers themselves are Catholic who've grown up in the new era, the era of personal conscience rather than catechism. They themselves reject a lot of the old teachings, and they teach their children in the new ethic.
Yet the ethic that you were talking about and religion, I think you would have to call it religion because you're talking about value systems and you're talking about responsibility. Mm-hmm. It is a religious school.
It certainly is a religious school. That was the big mistake that I made in studying it and why it took me 4 years. Originally, my thought was, I am not going to study the religious aspects of this school because obviously you cannot take the religious aspects and transfer them to public education. And what I want to know is what can be transferred, what can we learn from St. Mary's. So I determined to ignore the religious aspects. Well, that's like trying to study the body but ignoring the heart because you can't do a heart transplant. So when I went back and I began to look at the religious element, I began to realize that while there wasn't any overt insistence on religion and there was no dress code or any of the formal things that you associate with Catholic or parochial education, there was an ethic and an implicit value structure that was shared by everyone at the school. It was made most obvious when I was doing interviews of the teachers of St. Mary's and the teachers at the neighboring public schools. And I would have questions like, what would you do if students didn't come on time for an after-school activity? What I was looking for was any shared beliefs among the teachers, whether the school was pressing kids in a similar direction. Well, the public school teachers had no common belief. They generally would say, well, time isn't very important, or Eskimo kids don't have a sense of time, or I would tell them what they would miss, just sort of scattered random mm-hmm. responses to the situation. When I talked to the St. Mary's teachers, what was incredible was that although they would usually preface their remarks by saying, well, it doesn't really matter, I'm often late myself, or I would see whether that activity was worthwhile if all the kids were coming late to it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, they all said they were going to enforce a standard. And that standard was not coming on time, but being concerned about other people. And they said almost identical words, things like, I would tell the students who came late that they were making other people in the group wait for them and they weren't showing concern. Or if it was an activity for the class, they weren't helping the group work with the class. So they would always refer to this pivotal value of helping other people and being concerned for other people, which is also the cornerstone of the Eskimo value system. So the kids didn't have that clash in values between school and home. They were similar values. It was just that the application was different. You were generous and you helped other people, not through sharing food from the hunt, but through being considerate mm-hmm. in coming on time to meetings.
And that's where we get to the solution of the mystery, is that there are the similarities of the village system, the village ethic, and St. Mary's that seem to be at the heart of it. And it seems to be that fact that the life at St. Mary's was in a lot of ways similar to life in the village. And you'll have to explain more about that. But am I
sure.
right in thinking that's sort
yeah.
of the unraveling?
That was the unraveling. The final analysis, it was not that the teachers were volunteers or that they had high academic standards, although those things were important. It was that Eskimo students who encountered St. Mary's didn't encounter an environment that was structured altogether differently. They had a strong value system which students could use to help shape their own identity, but it was the value system of the students' own village and of the students' parents, who were, of course, also Catholic and had sent their children to the schools or had approved of their going because they, in fact, shared it. So they weren't creating split personalities, personalities that were caught between two cultures. They were creating unified personalities, personalities who felt that helping others, being of service to others, was important. It was important in the village, and it was important in the Western world. And the ways you did it were working with a corporation, becoming a teacher, helping your classmates in little things. They had a real concrete idea of the particular behavior that reflected this ideal, and they practiced it in the school situation.
One of the interesting things that really, to me, pointed that out was the direction that the student leaders took, or the type of leadership that developed, which seemed also in keeping with Eskimo tradition.
Right. One of the goals of the schools was to develop leadership, but it couldn't be a white-style leadership, a power trip. I'm better than everybody else. I'm the man on the white horse who's galloping ahead and showing you all where to go.
Do this, do that.
Yeah, and it's an extremely inappropriate style. So if they were preparing leaders for the village, they couldn't prepare them in a style. Also young kids, young educated kids, it's highly inappropriate to show off and such. So what they did was they redefined leadership. It was fascinating to watch because the kids would say it themselves. They would say, I'm standing up for class president now, and they would talk about it in terms of being, as they said, of service to others, or you have to help other people, I'm helping the class. It was just not at all an ego thing. It was a service thing. The other thing that St. Mary's did was teach leadership very much the way you teach typing. It was interesting to watch because it was so well done. The school had certain traditions that were quite important. They had mostly to do with planning entertainment, with school activities. If you're in an isolated boarding school, what you do on Friday night and whether there's a dance or a talent show or something like that is really important. And it wasn't only important to the kids, it was important to the teachers who all went to these events and watched them. Well, the school's position was, we don't have the money to hire a recreation director like the public schools do, so the kids have to plan and organize it themselves. And they viewed it particularly as teaching leadership, teaching kids how to organize and plan things. And there was a ritual to it. You could diagram it in terms of all the steps of leadership, but the way it was done was one of the students got up, the head of the class, and they said, what are we going to do on Friday night? And the class shouted out answers, and they put the answers on the board. So first they defined the alternatives. And then they discussed it, and they came to some sort of consensus. They very rarely voted. Consensus is just more culturally appropriate. Then they assigned committees. You know, you do this, you do that. The committees reported to the class as to what was feasible, and then they divvied up the work. It was an extremely smooth way to do it. By the time the kids were seniors, they could go through all the steps of planning and organizing an activity without any interference or help at all. It was just like water wearing down rock, you know. After 5 or 6 years, all the expectations were you were going to grow up, you were going to turn into something, you were going to mature. The seniors had done it before you. You were going to be the same. As I began to study the school, I almost became sorry for the kids. I thought they just didn't have a chance. Those socialization pressures are so strong.
They were going to come out St. Mary's students.
They were going to come out. They were either going to leave the school, which some of them certainly did, or they were going to come out.
Judith Kleinfeld, she wrote the book Eskimo School on the Andreevsky about St. Mary's School in southwestern Alaska. In our next program, we'll find out if the St. Mary's formula can work anywhere else, and whether St. Mary's itself can survive. For Chinook Profiles, I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Profiles. I'm Paula Schiller with the final episode in our continuing effort to solve the mystery of St. Mary's School. St. Mary's is a Catholic boarding school in the lower Yukon region, which has been noticeably successful in turning out equally successful bicultural students. That is, students who are comfortable in white society and who still retain their own cultural values. Judith Kleinfeld of the Institute of Economic and Social Research spent more than 4 years trying to find out why St. Mary's works, and she has written a book called Eskimo School on the Andreevsky, A Study in Effective Bicultural Education. In it, we learn that St. Mary's has been effective partly because the students or their parents have chosen the school and therefore have somewhat similar motivation. Also, they share their religious and traditional Eskimo values. Another important element rests in the relationship between the students and the teachers. The teachers are volunteers, and they are with the students 24 hours a day, and they can therefore teach as much about human relationships as they do about reading, writing, and arithmetic. But does that mean that the St. Mary's style of effective bicultural education can only happen in a Catholic boarding school with volunteer teachers? Is St. Mary's an isolated phenomenon that doesn't relate to any other place or any other school? What can we draw from St. Mary's that will be useful elsewhere?
That's the question I asked myself many times, as to whether this was an isolated case and its value was showing that it could be done, and that the ways that the public schools were doing it weren't really going to work very well. But then, as I thought more about it and looked more at other events in Alaska, it seems to me that what St. Mary's is really saying is that formal schooling is limited in what it can do. It can teach subjects, and learning subjects are important. There's no question about it. But if you're after a broader development, the development of effective bicultural people, you have to look to other educational institutions besides formal schools. And what these educational institutions are that are going to be effective may vary in different places. In some cases, the church may be an effective agent. In other villages, the church isn't in that position. One agency that I think has a lot of potential is youth organizations. Youth organizations have a lot of the characteristics of religious schools, such as St. Mary's. They're groups of adolescents, they're self-selected, they can espouse a value system. Many cultures have used youth organizations as a way of developing kids and bringing them into adulthood. All through Alaska, there are very intriguing but undocumented accounts of religious youth organizations, Boy Scouts, 4-H clubs, which seem to have had a lot of developmental impact on kids, creating peer groups devoted to certain ideals, cutting out drinking, that kind of thing.
So let me see if I'm clear. Mm-hmm. You could have the kids, Native kids, going to a public school and getting their formal instruction, getting their mm-hmm. A's and C's and
right.
and civics, and but then to make up for some of that sense of community and value system that they wouldn't be getting,
yeah,
they
the could warmth, go the community, to go to a youth organization, or some other non-formal educational institution. Right now, we're working on a proposal which has been submitted to the Van Leer Foundation for developing youth organizations in the Nana region and seeing if youth organizations can accomplish this. What we're hoping to do, if we do get funded, is to work with Native educators in each of the villages, the same model as the XSEED program, which has been quite successful in training Native teachers, and helping the Native educators to better understand the problems of youth, the problems of transition, and the potential effectiveness of different types of youth organizations. We hope eventually that the Native educators will develop ones in ways that relate to the village and help students work out some of these value conflicts, some of the ideals of adulthood, and create within the group a sense of community and peer group support for growing up in productive directions.
That seems to me you might have a problem with some of the separation. You wouldn't have a necessarily bicultural person coming out. You'd have your school, and then you might be separated to the cultural things. Would that increase the problem of having a separate student or student that has one face that he puts on at school and for dealing with white community and another face that he puts on at the youth group in the village where he's comfortable, and you're not integrating him?
I hope it wouldn't. I can see that it would certainly be a possibility, but if schools try to do so much, and particularly village high schools with one or two teachers don't have the resources to do everything. What we've been developing at the Center for Cross-Cultural Studies, this is primarily Ray Barnhart's work, is the notion that schools should concentrate on teaching intellectual subjects and cognitive skills. They shouldn't try to be medical centers, social centers, psychological centers, recreational centers. There are other institutions in the society that are far better equipped to perform those tasks. Many of them are native institutions, such as the corporations, the city government, and so forth, where you don't have the problem of a white socializing system set up. So let the school do what it can do. Nobody else can do it. If the kids don't learn the 3 R's at school, they're not going to get them, and they're important. And abdicate some of these other roles to other agencies, which are far better equipped to help students deal with value conflicts and developing identity.
What about, though, the integration of the two?
I don't think integration is a problem if the school isn't trying to do the value systems, the identity formation as well, any more than integration is a problem, say, for you if you go to a psychology course and the psychology course is about principles of behavior modification. It's knowledge. It's important. But if you go to a psychology course and the teacher lays on his trip about personal development and the kind of person you should be, and that doesn't square with the way your own beliefs have developed in your home and in the people you've chosen, there you've got a conflict.
Mm-hmm. So you're taking the conflict, the cultural conflict, out of the schools, leaving the schools with the technical subjects, the teaching, and putting the cultural and societal things.
Yeah, lodge them with the community and lodge them with native organizations.
I see. Do you think it has a chance?
We'll see.
Does it depend on people reading your book, or is this something that's well known and I just happened to pick up the book and should have known this all along?
I don't think any particular book ever has a specific effect or any particular piece of research. What happens is the climate of ideas change, the way people think about problems change. Originally, the thought was the school should be the center of life, the pulsating electrical company in a rural village. And now a number of things have happened that make people think differently about the role of schools and the role of other agencies. It's more people will read the book, people will read Ray Barnhart studies, people will observe schools and will observe youth organizations, and through all of these sources of information and their own ideas, gradually people's concepts of what the problem is and what the solution is may change.
Is it exciting for you to be in the middle of this?
I love the work. I particularly miss the opportunity to do field work. I've had recently 3 little babies, 1, 3, and 5, so my wings have been clipped, and for the next couple of years I don't see myself flying around to the schools as I would like to.
A question, finally, is St. Mary's a one-shot deal? Are we going to have St. Mary's in the future? Is it something that can continue? Is it just a little prize off there on the delta that has outlived its usefulness?
That's a question that the school asks itself and the diocese as well, because the school is privately financed by the Catholic Church and by contributions. It's a tremendous financial burden on the church. So if it has outlived its usefulness, the school doesn't want to assume it. The big thing that's changing in Village Alaska, of course, has been the formation of village high schools. Now that students can go to school at home in their village and there's no real need for them to go to boarding schools, is there a need for St. Mary's or any other boarding school? The school's enrollment, particularly when village high schools were introduced, declined. It's since gone up. But that question always remains, have village high schools made St. Mary's an anachronism? I wouldn't venture a prediction as to what's going to happen to the school, because it depends on too many factors, economic, personalities, and so on. So far, however, its enrollment has remained fairly steady. It seems to me to have its greatest value as an alternative for students who want to go to college. In many cases, village high schools aren't equipped to teach the range of subjects necessary for a good preparation for college, and I think that St. Mary's would do its most useful service if it focused on those students who are highly academically inclined and gave them the solid background necessary to do well in a college program.
Judith Kleinfeld wrote Eskimo School on the Andreevsky, a study ineffective bicultural education, to show how one school works and how others may learn from it. I'm Paula Schiller, and you've been listening to Chinook, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.